Well, hi, folks. This is Jack Spierko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. This is Thursday, December the 12th, 2024. This is episode 3597 of the Survival Podcast. Since it's a Thursday, there's no live stream, and it's an expert council show. This one will be a little shorter than typical. I've got five segments plus my anchor segment for expert council. I usually do six or seven from the council, but there's a reason to my madness. Yes. So a couple of things. One is I don't have that much content in the bank from expert council members. And because we're getting very close to Christmas time, I am not counting on a non-piking council going into next week. So I've kept a bit of a battery so I can make sure we do have a show for you next week. So I held one or two back that normally would have made the lineup today. The other reason is, and this is kind of cool news, I don't know if it'll go anywhere yet, but I actually have a call scheduled. I got to get done today early. I've got a call scheduled at 2 p.m. today with the Price Pottinger Foundation. Of course, these are the people that are actually what the Weston A. Price Foundation claims they are and isn't. They're actually the organization that is sanctioned by the Weston A. Price and Dr. Pottinger's family to continue those two doctors' work into nutrition and health. And so if you really are a fan of Weston A. Price and you want an organization that actually does his real work instead of Sally Fallon's bullshit as a K Street lobbyist firm, which is what the Weston A. Price Foundation is, then you want to deal with Price Pottinger. So you might think they want to talk to me about primal or paleo or keto or something to do with food. Indirectly, it is food, but it's not really food. I'm actually going to be talking to them today about biochar. They seem to be working towards doing a project with some contaminated soils that they want to use biochar to restore. So I don't know where that's going to go with them. They did say they would be happy in return to promote my biochar course when it comes out early in the coming year. So we'll see where that goes. But I really like them, and it's kind of an honor to get to at least have a quick conversation with them about what they could do and how they can do it. So I don't know exactly what they're going to do yet, but we'll find out. So that's why I got to kind of shorten the show a bit today. But here's what I got for you. Dan McAdams and Dr. Ron Paul will be asking a simple question. Is Syria another deep state headache for Trump? I think it's a deep state headache for sure. And I'm kind of feeling like they did it in an accelerated manner to make sure it was Trump's problem on the way out. I feel like the Biden administration, you know, in line with my earlier episode this week, is burning everything they can on the way out. They're destroying as much as they can. They're doing as much to like salt the earth before the new farmer comes in and then say he's not a good farmer because you salted his freaking field is what's going on. Hopefully Trump will be smart enough to not take the bait on this. Trump already came out when all this shit started. I think he knew what was going on. When you're at, you know, your president-elect this close, you know everything that they're doing that you could possibly know. I'm sure there's some things you don't know. But he basically said it's not our problem, not our fight. I hope he stays that way. I don't care what happens. I don't care what happens now. Because you know what you're going to hear soon? As soon as Brandon's gone and Trump's in office, Christians are being slaughtered. They're already being slaughtered. That was always going to happen. That's why you didn't remove Assad for all the years you didn't remove him. Now you did it, and then you're going to say it's Trump's fault. So we'll see what Dr. Paul and Dan have to say about that, because I haven't listened to them yet. Chef Ken Daniels has some ideas for the holidays. One, he's got a holiday pizza idea. It's kind of cool. And then another thing he has is, what do you do with 12 egg whites? Where the hell did that question come from? Well, it came from the blog. And last week, Ken gave us a recipe with eggs for making eggnog. And it involves separating the whites and the yolks. And it's interesting because when I've looked up recipes on eggnog where they say to use the whole egg, always in the comments will be something like, how do I prevent it from separating in the refrigerator? You know, put the whites in there. Right, I have an agreement with Ken. You get a deeper, richer eggnog when you use the yolks only. But then you have like 12 egg whites. What do you do with them? He's got an idea for that. Mike Melito will talk about what to look for in a solid gun case. Dr. Ken Berry will talk about B-17 from a medical perspective. We've already had a question, this same question answered by one of the other council members. You'll hear what Ken has to say about it today. It's a little bit different. Doc Bone, speaking of doctors, will talk about consuming biochar or charcoal from a doctor's opinion perspective. And then I'm going to talk about something everybody's talking about, and I've got a ton of questions. What's going on, Jack? The drones over New Jersey. Should we even care? You know, I believe that the more the media wants you to pay attention to something, probably the more you shouldn't. What's really going on here? I'll tell you what I think when we get to my segment. Before we do that today, though, I want to let you know about today's item of the day. The item of the day today is not an Amazon item. It's from Vivor, and it's their Conical Burr coffee grinder. And this is their larger, better one of the two that they have. This thing is freaking awesome. I learned about it from Nicole Sauce. She's tried it. She likes it. If anything coffee-related gets by Nicole Sauce, we know that it's pretty damn good. This thing is honestly built the way that burr grinders that cost 2-3 times more are built. You know, Vivor doesn't do everything perfect. I've been very clear about be careful what you buy. You know, pretty much if I recommend it, you know that it's good. But if you're out shopping on your own, make sure you read reviews both on Vivor's side and on the Amazon side, and be sure you know what you're doing. This thing, though, with great reviews, at least by people that know how to use a coffee grinder, know what it's supposed to do and what it's not supposed to do, and follow instructions. And again, Nicole says it works really good, too. I got one. I loved it, so I decided to review it for you guys. It'd make a great Christmas gift. It is very common to see burr grinders $200-$300. This thing is $63 as long as you have an account with Vivor. And then you can get another 5% off using my discount code VEV5OFF. If you use that code, you get 5% off anything you buy there, but specifically this. Check the write-up on the site. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and scroll down. It should be right under today's episode. And I think if you give something like this a shot, you'll see why it is a better way to grind coffee. And then read the article as well that I wrote for it, because it does give you some really interesting information about how you can start with the exact same beans and end up with very different coffees by changing things. You know, obviously the roast temperature, which is how you order your coffee, but things like the brew temperature, the grind size, the brew time, water quality, your ratio of coffee to water, how fresh the beans are, and that's directly applicable to grinding, because beans stay fresh a lot longer as a whole bean than a grind, and your filter type. And I give you some things you can do where you can take the same coffee with very small variances and make it taste differently. The cool thing about this coffee grinder is, generally speaking, if it's not a burr grinder, your choices are things like fine, medium, coarse. What does that mean? They don't really know, and the reason they don't know is you don't get an even grind. Some of it's really tiny small, some of it's really big, some of it's the right size when you do that. But there is no uniformity, and there's also no real control. With this coffee grinder, you have 51 grinding settings. So even within what you would consider coarse, you can have quite a bit of variability. What's a cool thing to do then is to, if you, you know, make a cup of coffee with a certain setting and try it, and then change it, make it a little coarser, a little finer, what have you, and dial it in, you know, the temperature, the time, the ratio, all of it to make your perfect cup of coffee. And then you can give a giant middle finger to Starbucks at $5 a cup for coffee that, I'm going to be honest about Starbucks, if I take out all the foofy-floo stuff, if it's just a cup of coffee even, right, the coffee that you can go buy at like a racetrack or a QT is as good as a standard cup of coffee from Starbucks that costs $4 or $5. So don't do that. Make your own and make a better product. And one thing I said in there, and I want to throw a pitch out for these three companies right now. If you're going to look for special coffee for Christmas or coffee for gifts, there's still time to get it by Christmas, but do it now. Holler Roast, which of course is Nicole Sauce, Food Forest Farms, which is Brian over in Washington, and Mai Tai Coffee. All three of those are MSB supporter vendors that have been supporting us a long time. If you go with Mai Tai, check out the Butter Rum. The only reason that even exists as an all-the-time available product is because of me. Because they did it as a special run. I'm like, no, you guys. And they did. They're like, okay, Jack, we'll do it. And so they made it available. And the Mexicali, those are great too. Anyway, with that, that's a long intro for a short show. Let's go ahead and hear from our first expert of the day. It'll be Dan McAdams and Ron Paul. The Ron Paul Liberty reports on the issue in Syria.
Last week, there was a ceasefire, a little over a week ago, a ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon. And I think that's what set events in motion, because for many years, I would say a decade, in the Idlib region of Syria was where the jihadists were kind of kept in a cage. That's where they were located. There was kind of a tense ceasefire with the authorities in Damascus, the Assad authorities in Damascus. And that was kind of a slow boil, a slow burn. And all of a sudden, when this ceasefire hit, the jihadists in Idlib started breaking out, and they started taking over a good deal of the country in Syria. It was pretty incredible, and a lot of people have suggested that this was an operation. And I think the fact that it went so smoothly suggests that it was an operation to eliminate the supply lines from Iran through Syria into Lebanon to resupply Hezbollah while the ceasefire happened. I think that's a reasonable explanation. Although, again, like everything else, Dr. Paul, we don't know.
We're very much involved. We're using bombs and we're using money, and we don't have any money. It's part of our interventionism. Yes, it's a mess there. But are we going to wave a wand and bring peace out of this mess? Yeah, unlikely. I think it's going to cost us money. I think it's going to linger. I don't think it's going to be over in 1 month. And as they said, so many of these wars, Daniel, that we objected to, there was always the argument, oh, this is going to be a short war. We can take care of this. It turns into decades. Some of this stuff in decades. So this hope, it isn't that bad.
Well, we've done a couple of shows, Dr. Paul, where we've talked about the transition period. And I know you did a column a week or so ago about this, about how, you know, these transitions are supposed to be times of quiet where the new administration gets ready to come in. And I think you can't discount the possibility that the deep state, whoever's behind Biden, was involved in launching this to give yet another headache to the incoming President Trump. Now, this is what's fascinating, Dr. Paul. This was put out by the United States Embassy in Syria in 2017 when President Trump was in power. It's a wanted poster. Stop this terrorist, Muhammad al-Jalani, up to a $10 million reward. We remain committed to bringing the leading al-Qaeda figures like HTS to justice. This is the U.S. Embassy. Now, fast forward to the next one, Brandon Weikert's tweet, and he has a long thread that makes a point. Just to be clear, the Turkish and U.S.-backed leader of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, a 42-year-old man pictured named Abu Muhammad al-Jalani, likely killed and maimed scores of U.S. troops during the insurgency in Iraq between 2003 and 2006. So this is a former, I would say, wanted terrorist by the United States government, $10 million bounty on his head. This is the person who is now in control of Syria, a person that has killed many Americans, but a person who was probably helped into power by the CIA. We know that the CIA has been trying to overthrow Assad for a long time. So it's one of those things, Dr. Paul, where the U.S. is backing both sides. We're backing the terrorists. We're bombing the terrorists. I guess it's just good for business.
There is only one way to handle this going forward. It's not our problem. I don't care how bad it gets. I don't care if it becomes a problem for Israel, who was a big part of getting it done. I don't care if it becomes a problem for Turkey, who was a big part of getting it done. I don't care. We have to do absolutely nothing now. Anything we do will only make it worse. We made it worse because we were involved in this in the first place. Okay? Israel destroyed all of their chemical weapons and air defense. And you know how they knew where they were? Because we told them and coordinated with them when they made those attacks. We were as much responsible for what happened here as Israel and Turkey and other and the resistance to Assad war. This is all 100% on our hands, and we still need to do nothing. But Jack, if we messed it up, then we need to stop touching it. There is literally not a single thing that we have touched in the Middle East that is better because we touched it. Iraq is not a better place because we touched it. Afghanistan is pretty much exactly where it was before we touched it, after we were done touching it. Two decades, trillions of dollars, hundreds of thousands of Afghani lives, thousands of American lives. Blood and treasure and death of people you don't know and would never know you and you'd never meet and would never do anything to you. And that's what we did. Why do you think there is a single place the United States can stick its nose into in the Middle East right now and actually improve things across time in any meaningful way when we have literally never done it after fucking with it for over a century? Okay, when you mess something up, every time you touch it, you stop. Unless you're a sociopath or your goal is to mess it up. Okay? Our goal is to mess it up. This is the plan. And what Trump needs to say is, yeah, you're right. The previous administration screwed this up. I'm not fixing it. He needs to stay where he is. I believe they're trying to make this impossible for Trump. Intentionally. And this will bite Israel in the effing ass. 100% guarantee you that it will bite them in the effing ass. Wait and see. All the United States needs to do is nothing. And sometimes nothing's a very difficult thing for people to do, especially when they think they're so special that they can do what others can't. And this whole thing about quick wars, there's two kinds of wars. There's really two kinds of wars. I'm talking actual like bullets, bombs, fire, explosions, bombing buildings, that kind of war. When I say two kinds of war, I don't mean, you know, trade wars and embargoes. I mean full-on warfare. There's two kinds. There's wars where one side, it doesn't matter who's fighting, one side is fighting against a group of people, and there's wars when one side's fighting against a country. There is a possibility when you're fighting a country, meaning a government, that war can be quick, and it can be over, and it can be won. Because when people that run a country are completely overwhelmed and there's any way out of it, they tend to make a deal. Okay? Governments make deals. They want to stay in power. Saddam Hussein, first Gulf War. See what I mean? That's why it happened quickly. That's why we were dumb enough to believe if we went back in, we could do it even faster this time. Okay, that's a war against a country. When you topple the leadership of that country, if the war continues, you're now fighting people. People fight because they're mad. People fight because they're angry. People fight because they want you dead. People fight because they don't want you in their country. Those wars are long because when somebody says, hey, we need to stop fighting, some of the people say, yeah, no, I don't think so. We have completely ignored that rule of warfare. And that is one of the primary rules of warfare that you pay close attention to when you choose to engage in conflict if you actually want to win or avoid a protracted, prolonged war for no real gain, which is all we have done. We have gotten nothing out of this. The average American is poorer and more miserable for everything we've done for 100 years in the Middle East. But let's go do it again, because I'm sure some of you are for it. You shouldn't be. Let's do something better. That's going to be the only thing. Well, my anchor segment will be a little bit like this. Let's talk about the holidays are coming. I love the holidays. I love Christmas. Let's talk about some things that we can cook. How about a holiday pizza? And if you made or are going to make Chef Ken's eggnog, which is delicious, by the way, then you would end up with a whole bunch of egg whites. What might you do with them? Ken has an answer to both of these things.
Hello, everyone. This is Ken here with DrinkEatLearn.com. I've been getting a ton of great questions asking for tips, how-tos on holiday dinners, and ways to make this time of year easier. I picked out a few to answer because I believe there's a ton of listeners that could find this stuff useful. So let's get started. First question comes from Laurel. I'm hosting a Christmas Eve dinner. I usually do prime rib, but cringe when the little bastards leave it on their plate to be thrown out. Any suggestions on a delicious meal that takes into account children? Yes, Laurel, I've always made pizza. And in this case, it's like a mashed potato pizza. So I start with a dough, and we'll get into the dough in a little bit. And I use ranch dressing or olive oil for my base. Odds are you're already making mashed potatoes, so I just take a little and spread a little thin layer. I do a little layer of low moisture mozzarella, mild cheddar, or any meltable cheese. Less is definitely more with toppings. The more you add, the heavier the slices, and it just makes it more messy. At this point, you've got your sides for dinner already made, so just add it to the pizza. Maybe some corn kernels, chop up some green beans and mushrooms. Arugula from the shallot? Sure. Let your kids decide. Hell, let them make this for you. If you want to spare some of the prime rib, turkey, ham from the main dinner, chop it up. Add it to the pizza. I always cook some bacon and crumble it on top. I never really need a reason to cook bacon, but this is a really good way to use it. If you're feeling fancy, I mix in some cranberry sauce with ranch and drizzle it over the top. Makes the pizza look really festive and quite tasty. tasty. So as for pizza dough, I usually stop by my favorite mom and pop shop and ask to buy some pizza dough. If not, you could find some pre-made at the grocery store. It really doesn't matter. You're feeding the kids. It all depends on how much you care for your kids, and really no one's judging. Question number two, Chef Kenny, I've made your delicious recipe for eggnog, but now I've got 12 egg whites. What can I do with these? I'll give you a couple of ideas the way I use egg whites, especially this time of year. My personal use, especially since I have a big supply of readily available eggs, I usually add it to my dog's food. I have a couple of dogs, one being an old 225-pound English Mastiff, so I need a lot of food. Giblets, some raw turkey bones, organ meat, a small bit of kefir, as recommended by Joel from Fortress Canine, which I've seen a huge improvement in my dog's health with this recommendation, so big thanks to Joel. And then I add a bit of egg whites. I tend to freeze my egg whites in the ice cube trays and then throw it in. It's less of a gooey mess, and it's a nice crunch for the dogs. But if you're looking for something to feed the family or do something for the holidays, I'm definitely doing forgotten cookies. If you've never heard of these, it's one of the reasons why it's called forgotten cookies, but also how it's made. These meringue cookies, you mix together, you throw in a hot oven, you close the door, you turn off the oven, and you forget about them overnight. They cook and dry out. They're fun and easy and big crowd pleasers this time of year. Really, any recipe you do on recipe you find for this online will do. I'll provide some my favorite recipes and tips and tricks to make this even easier on drinkeatlearn.com. Check it out. One note about egg whites. When in doubt, just freeze them, preferably in an ice tray. Then just move them to a Ziploc. They'll hold for about 2 months. Good for breakfast, whiskey sours, tons of other things. And the last question, Ken, I have no idea what wine to bring for these holiday dinners. Tips? Holiday meals this time of year are typically loaded with earthy flavors of like herbs and mushrooms and root vegetables and tons of umami stuff like ham and beef and turkey. We'll definitely get more into this in upcoming courses, and we can get pretty extensive in pairings. But in this context, I'm going to give you some specific grape varietals and the regions it's from, things you can ask for your local grocery store or liquor store. So here are my go-to wines readily available at any place. I almost promise you, you're going to find these almost everywhere. Any Pinot Noir from Oregon. This red wine is made for earthy, herbal notes that any holiday meal can throw at it. You'll usually be a big hit with the wine snobs when you walk in with this. As for a white, I'm looking for Sauvignon Blancs, but from California. I'd stay away from New Zealand. Although it's a crowd favorite, it's really not suited for the flavors of the holiday. A little bit of extra credit. When in doubt, just buy some bubble. Champagne, Prosecco, Sparkling, Cava, Cremant, whatever you call it. It's a big hit because bubbles are synonymous with celebration. Make sure you bring it chilled, though. Remember, this isn't a wine pairing dinner. Most times, your aunt isn't going to care about what wine you brought. She just wants wine. And don't be afraid of boxed wine, either. There's 3 liters in a boxed wine. In a regular bottle, you're lucky to get 4 glasses. So a boxed wine goes a lot further. Do not be afraid of boxed wine. I hope these questions and answers helped. There's a lot of pressure during this time of year, and I'd say more than Thanksgiving because you've got the added pressure of presents and family and all these things going on. Remember, if you need tips, recipes, or just general therapy over food and beverage woes, do not hesitate to contact me at drinkeatlearn.com. Until next time, this is Ken. Cheers.
Well, I just want to say one, it is a great thing that Ken is now part of the expert council. I think we've made some really great additions recently to the EC. Ken Daniels, of course, Mike Melito, who you're about to hear from, Carrie is definitely a big addition. He's not on this week, but he's one of the people I sandbag for a week so that I'll have enough content next week. So this is just awesome. The other thing I want to say is forgotten cookies. Yes, do that. And why do I say that? Now, they're sugar bombs, okay? They really are. They're kind of like a crunchy marshmallow with some flavoring in them. And you can also add food coloring to them if you want to be cool colors. My wife always makes them red and green for Christmas. Like I've said before, I try to eat really healthy and I keep my carbs down very, very low and I eat very little sugar, actual sugar. Things for holidays and stuff, though, hey, every once in a while, even though I don't have any hair because I keep it cut short, I let it down anyway. And this is a family tradition from Dorothy's side of the family. This was not something just her mom made, but her grandmother made these. And I believe that her grandmother learned how to make them from her great-grandmother. It's pretty much the same way. I will make sure that the recipe sheet is added today and will be in the show notes. You can go next to Ken's segment and click to get his recipe for them as well. Next up, I mentioned Mike Melito. Let's talk to Mike Melito now about what to look for in a gun case.
What is going on, TSP? Mike Melito here, back to answer your gun questions. Question today is from Roman. Bottom line up front, what to look for when looking for a solid gun carrier. Then he expands on that in quite a bit of detail. And his expounding on that leads me to believe he means solid as in a good quality gun case, not necessarily a hard gun case, but I'll answer it both ways just in case. Now, this or any other brands that I mentioned, I don't take sponsors on my podcast. I refuse sponsors. But as you can imagine, serving in two branches of the armed forces and being issued six different camouflage patterns over the years and being primary infantry in both Marine Corps and Army, you can imagine I know my way around a rucksack and a pack, and I've been issued a lot of those too. In the private contracting security world, I'm around a lot of stuff. I'm trying to give you what I think is a good value. I'm not brand loyal to anything. But my number one pick is going to be the Eberle Stock Gun Runner. And here's why. If somebody said to me, hey, what's your recommendation for a go-to, I mean, this is a survival podcast, a go-to bug-out bag, I'm going to say Eberle Stock Gun Runner. If they say, hey, I want to get into Western hunting, right? I just got done, by God's grace, with a successful River of No Return wilderness elk hunt. They say, what's your go-to recommendation for a Western hunting pack? I'm going to say Eberle Stock Gun Runner. Say, I want to just get into rucking and hiking to stay in shape. What's a good, comfortable rucksack? I'm going to say Eberle Stock Gun Runner. And there's a lot of good packs out there, but this is one of the best. But also, it's a gun scabbard. You don't want it to be a gun scabbard. You can fold it up into itself origami style, and it's just a really good pack. You can unfold it. The scabbard kind of folds out and rides in between your body and the pack, if you can picture that. It's a really good gun scabbard. It will hold a conventional style hunting rifle, and it will also hold an M4 style rifle with up to a 20 round mag in it. So it's also a really good gun carrier. And if you're, it sounds like the listener from the lengthiness of his inquiry is getting into guns and hunting and all that kind of stuff, and you're probably going to want a good pack anyway. So why not deduct the money from that, from the Eberle Stock Gun Runner? It's not a crazy expensive pack as far as packs goes, and it's one of the best in my opinion. And it's also a really good soft gun case slash gun scabbard. If you're going to use it as your truck gun carrier, just a little tactical tip, like in your backseat, have it so when you open up your back door of your truck or your car or whatever, that buttstock is right there and you can just grab it and pull it out quickly, because time is important in those kind of situations. And then when somebody looks into your car, they just see a bag. They don't see any part of the gun sticking out. The next one I'm going to recommend I used when I was the commander of a tactical team, and I had to outfit my guys doing urban operations, and we had long guns, but I didn't want to scream, hey, I have a long gun. Think of it like a giant covert sling bag that you can put a rifle in. And you can also put in your line one gear for your rifle, extra mags, ammo, cleaning kit, Eye and Ear Pro if you're going to the range, if you want to use it as a range bag. It's a phenomenal bag for that as well. And that pack's going to be your Vanquist Racket 36. And it doesn't scream tactical. Going back to that on the, whether this pack or another pack, get it in a good neutral color. A good green color, gray, brown. Not everything has to be multicam, right? If you want it to be a good multifunctional bag, not just for hunting in the woods or whatever. And trust me, the deer's not going to care that your pack's the next Gucci camouflage pattern. Get a good solid colored pack, that way you can use it in all kinds of environments. But this Vanquist pack comes in a lot of the neutral style colors that you wouldn't scream, hey, I have a long gun in here. It's also a really good gun carrier for going back and forth to the range. It's not a full-fledged rucksack like the Eberle Stock Gun Runner, so you're not putting a lot of stuff in here. It's not going to work as a bug-out bag. But it's a really good gun carrier, and you can put some extra kit in there. Now, if you just want a straight-up soft gun case that carries some extra stuff, Midway USA has their own brand of they have their own brand, Midway USA, of gun cases. They have a soft gun case that's kind of my go-to. It comes in different lengths. Obviously, get it a couple of inches longer than you think you're going to need. But it comes with the main compartment, a big side pouch, and some magazine pouches. And for most rifles, if you're just like, I want a soft gun case and be able to throw some stuff in there for the range, they're affordable. They're good quality. I have some that I've had for years and years that I have that are fantastic for a good cushioned soft gun case. You can spend a lot more, but the Midway USA brand is a phenomenal gun case for the money. And if you did, in fact, mean like a solid, like a hard gun case, if you're getting on a plane and going to, you know, the Middle East to do some contracting work, you probably want the traditional old school Pelican case that are crazy expensive. But Pelican also makes a more affordable version called the Vault. The Pelican Vault, if you're looking for an actual hard case, those are really good and not really expensive. So the Pelican Vault, those are really good hard cases if you're looking for, if what you meant by solid is a solid hard gun case. Obviously, guns and all the adjacent gear is a big topic. So I have my own podcast, Gunfighter Life. I'm not going to insult your intelligence. You know how to use a search engine. There's hundreds of episodes you can look up. But just to recap real quick, my number one recommendation, Eberle Stock Gunrunner, because it's a phenomenal pack and a phenomenal soft gun carrier. If you're looking for a more urban, covert kind of gun carrier, it's going to be that Vanquist sling bag. You just want a good soft gun case for the money, the Midway USA brand. And if you want a rock-solid hard case that's not going to set you back, that's not going to have you selling a kidney, that Pelican Vault is a good hard gun case. With that, Roman, I hope you enjoy your journey into the wide world of guns and firearms, both for defense and putting meat on the table. Thanks, TSP, and have a blessed day.
So if you're like, what? Don't worry. I got it all. I got it all for you. The first pack Mike recommended, I've got the link for that. The second one, I've got a link for that. The second one is on Amazon. The first one is from the manufacturer alone. It's not sold on Amazon. I got a link to Midway USA, just where their cases are, where you can look through them and figure out what you want. And then I got a link to where the Pelican Vault cases are on Amazon for you as well. So all of it's there. Next up, let's hear from Doc Ken Berry on B17.
Hey, Jack and the TSP crew. This is Dr. Ken Berry, answering a question from Ryan today about vitamin B17. This is a subject that I've actually dug into the research over the course of years. I used to take one or two bitter almonds a day for B17 probably 15, 17 years ago as I was becoming intrigued with this concept. And so B17 occurs mostly in bitter almonds. There's a few other sources. It's not really even considered a proper vitamin by the mainstream powers that be, but many alternative medicine people promote it as a cancer prevention or a cancer treatment. Bitter almonds also contain something called cyanide, which if you eat too many bitter almonds, will absolutely kill you. But you got to eat quite a few. The more I look into this research, I'm unimpressed. I'm unconvinced. I no longer take bitter almonds. I'm not afraid of them. I just don't think that there's any meaningful benefit to them. There are much better ways to prevent cancer and fight cancer. If you want to eat one or two bitter almonds a day, I don't think it's going to hurt you. Is it worth the time, trouble, and money? Probably not. Hope this helps. Thanks a lot. This is Dr. Berry. Talk to you next time.
And yeah, a very similar but different take on B17 from the last expert council member who answered this question. And I agree with this as well. Like, you won't die. It won't kill you. And I mean, if you eat enough of anything that's got anything bad in it, it will kill you. You drink enough water if you really try and either harm or actually you can literally kill yourself drinking water. It takes some real heroic and stupid effort, suicidal-level effort, but it can be done. But it's probably not going to do anything for you. Not everything the government says is bad is something you should be using. And not everything the government says is good is something you should be using. I'll save my thoughts on the government's opinion on things for a bit. Next, we got another doctor on the expert panel. Of course, that is Dr. Bones, and he's going to talk about, should you consume biochar?
Hi, Joe Alton, MD here, also known as Dr. Bones of the survival website doomandbloom.net, co-author of the Book Excellence Award-winning fourth edition of the Survival Medicine Handbook, and designer of quality medical kits at store.doomandbloom.net. This week's question for the expert council comes from Roy, who writes, I have a question for Dr. Bones regarding the use of biochar for human consumption. Can biochar be useful for human consumption to either remove toxins or to balance the gut? I watched Jack's recent video about making biochar and how good it is to add to the diet for dogs and poultry. I've also heard of this for pigs and other livestock over the years. I know our digestive system is different, but it got me to wondering if there could be a benefit. Since it helps the gut of livestock to add small amounts to their feed, what might be the effect or usefulness to add into the human diet? And if so, should it be sterile or inoculated before using? Could this help pull toxins from the body or bring balance to the gut? Or just a bad idea altogether? Thanks. Respectfully, Roy. Roy, I don't get a lot of questions about biochar, so let's start by telling the folks just what it is. Biochar is a solid rich in carbon made from organic waste material or woody biomass that is partially combusted in the presence of limited oxygen. The qualities that make up biochar vary depending upon the material that it comes from, such as timber slash, corn stalks, manure, your grandmother, you're just kidding, of course, and the temperature at which the combustion occurs. The various materials and methods to produce biochar result in a wide variety of chemical and physical properties across the biochar products. To understand the properties of biochar, users should know what it was made from, called the feedstock, and the temperature at which it was made, anywhere from 300 to 700 degrees centigrade, or Celsius. The primary ingredient is a stable carbon that can persist in soils for years or decades, some even say millennia. Biochar can be used as a soil amendment by itself, or it can be blended with other soil amendments to address a wide range of environmental, agricultural, and forestry challenges. Using the right biochar can improve soil health, remediate polluted soils, lower greenhouse gas emissions, and improve soil moisture. Google the Pacific Northwest Biochar Atlas to find out more about its agricultural benefits. But that's not what you're asking me, Roy. You're asking me if it's a good idea to eat it, with the goal being to pull toxins from the gut like you might do with activated charcoal or bring, as you say, balance to the gut. The short answer is yes, biochar that is produced at the highest temperatures, 700 degrees Celsius or more, is non-toxic and can be eaten. Jack tells me he has eaten it and says it tastes like nothing if processed correctly. He feeds it daily to livestock and believes that it has improved health and quality and has reduced feed consumption by about 20% at the same time. Climate activists also believe it decreases methane emissions by ruminant livestock like cattle. It doesn't, however, seem to have an advantage over activated charcoal for human health, and I would consume it no more than, let's say, once a week. It seems to me also to probably cause constipation if consumed much more frequently than that. Biochar differs based on the feedstock used to make it. If there are toxins in the feedstock and you didn't process it right, they may still be there. Also, there are concerns about the use of large quantities, as the hydrocarbons like PAHs pose an eventual increased risk of certain cancers and also decrease the effect of important human medications as it binds them as it would a toxin. So what's the difference between biochar carbon and activated carbon products? These are all termed bio-based carbons. Mostly it's the end use. Biochar is used for agriculture, charcoal for heating and cooking, and activated carbon for filtration and purification. The USDA National Organic Program, the NOP, has approved the use of activated charcoal as a synthetic substance allowed for use in organic livestock production. I would say it's used more in Europe than here, but it's not uncommon in the US. Terms can be misleading since charcoal is most commonly associated with grilling, which may give the impression that you can simply grind up your charcoal briquettes and use them as biochar. This is not necessarily the case. Charcoal briquettes for grilling can contain additives such as ignition accelerants, and these are not found in biochar and can be even toxic to plant growth. So, Roy, limited consumption of biochar is acceptable, and some have used it that way for decades, but it may not have an advantage over other activated charcoal or carbon products. It might cause constipation and could decrease the effectiveness of meds if taken at the same time. Putting it in your livestock feed or amending your soil with it might be a more effective use. This is Joe Alton, MD, that old Dr. Bones, wishing you the best of health in good times or bad. Thanks for listening. Hey, learn more about more than 200 off-grid medical topics in the award-winning fourth edition of the Survival Medicine Handbook. And get your family medically prepared with quality kits and individual supplies from our entire line at store.doomandbloom.net. You'll be glad you did.
So I'll just say, if you hear any caution in his voice here, doctors are naturally cautious, and there's no way somebody can know what you're doing when you're making biochar and know if the charcoal you made is proper charcoal. And definitely the charcoal briquettes comment, that could be instead of like sometimes is all the time. Charcoal briquettes are not biochar. They cannot be used as biochar. They cannot be eaten safely. No, 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 no. Lump charcoal is a little bit closer to probably being okay for biochar. I wouldn't eat it. It probably won't taste good. And it isn't really biochar because it's made at lower temperatures. And they do that because it is designed to be fuel. And why biochar makes great fuel. It's great fuel charcoal, very clean burning. If you're making a charcoal to sell to somebody's going to use on a grill, longer burn equals a higher perceived value by your customer. And some of those volatiles contribute to some of the really great grilling flavors. So they intentionally are going to use a lower temperature to make that charcoal because it makes a better product for what they are producing for the customer that they're selling it to. So just don't even think of using any of the stuff you buy in a bag from the grocery store to cook on your grill in your soil or your body. Use for cooking food. Now, I'm going to tell you that there's about zero risk in eating biochar that you've made yourself. Assuming you made it out of clean wood to begin with, there's just really the worst thing you're going to be doing is eating wood. Okay, so because you didn't fully pyrolyze it. I wouldn't do it on an ongoing basis if you weren't sure about it, but you're fine. However, if you really want to make a regular use of carbon in your body this way, then you probably would do better to use activated carbon for that, just because it's more effective, it's more efficient, it's made with tighter tolerances. I would kind of reserve using biochar in your own body if you want to do that with it for like grid down scenarios. You can't get it anywhere else and you think there's a benefit to you. Feeding your livestock, I highly, highly recommend it. It's not my opinion, and I don't think, and I don't feel that it does all the things for livestock the way Bones stated it. And I'm not picking on him. I'm just saying that's not the right use of the things that I say about what it does for livestock, livestock bedding, livestock diets, feed efficiency, gut health in your livestock. These are not opinions. These are knowns. These are quantifiable knowns. And the only reason it was removed as a feed additive in the United States is because the feed manufacturers lobbied the government to do so. And the only place I know of where it's legal to intentionally put it in feed right now in the United States is California. Occasionally, California actually does something right, but it's only for organic produced food in California. That doesn't mean you can't add it yourself. I recommend that you do so. Even commercial meat producers, commercial livestock, can absolutely add it. What they can't do is get it already put in the feed. And it's an interesting thing to me, the way that this happened is the feed manufacturers went to the government and said, we don't want to do this because there's no nutritional value to the biochar. But see, a small amount of biochar will reduce the total amount of feed the animal consumes because they get better feed conversion. So the feed companies were making less money by making a better product, and they didn't like that. Especially when you think, like, the feed companies that did this are probably not the ones that you're buying your feed from. They're probably the same companies, but they don't care about you. You're not significant. They're worried about, you know, the CAFO that buys a tractor trailer load a week. And they want to make sure that tractor trailer is absolutely stuffed to the gills full or that there's two of them. Anyway, let's move on. Let us talk today about the drones in New Jersey. This will be a pretty quick segment. Here's a basic rule that I follow. The harder that the mainstream media points at a thing and says, look at it, look at it, look at it, the less interested in it I become. The less interested in it I become. So the reality is, if there was anything to really worry about here, that anybody in the government really didn't know what was going on, they could figure it out in about 5 seconds. okay? If it was you flying your drone a little too close to a dirt strip airport, you probably would have had the Department of Making You Sad show up by now. The idea that we don't know who this is or what this is absolutely asinine. But I'm going to tell you what I think it is. When you watch a magician on stage and they put a scantily clad, very beautiful woman moving around with him, that is so that your eyeballs go there. And the way he moves his hands and the other things that go on and flashes and shit are all things you're supposed to look at so that you do not see what the magician is actually doing, so that when he pops up, you know, on a landing two stories up, wow, how did he do it? Well, he crawled under the thing, went through a tunnel, went up the stairs, and you were looking at tits. Okay? That's how it happened. And if you ever watch the series they did called Masked Magician, it's pretty much how all the tricks work. It is some level of misdirection. You look over here, you don't see what I'm doing, and therefore I can get away with what I'm pulling. That's what this is. That's what this is. And there's nothing more to it unless they want there to be something more to it, and then they already know what that something more is. So if 3 or 4 weeks from now it comes out that it was some kind of covert government program at all, they're only telling you that because they already knew they were going to tell you that, okay? There's nothing that's going to happen any differently if you ignore them talking about this than if you pay attention to it. And that's the truth of the majority of the news, no matter what you're being told. And I'll tell you what I know it isn't. It's not China or Russia. Right. So, I mean, imagine how stupid this is. So the Russians or the Chinese have developed this incredibly sophisticated drone technology that kind of looks like a TIE fighter, and they can do all kinds of evil shit. And what they're doing with it is they're spying on the fucking suburban housewives in the early morning in freaking New Jersey. This is the dumbest thing ever, and yet people are like, oh my god, the drones. And of course the people that hate Biden, it's all his fault, they're incompetent. Listen, this is a show. It's being put on for you as a show. If we had covert super secret spy drones, they would probably do something with them useful to the other part that owns them, and they wouldn't be hanging out. Here we are! Here, they're super secret spy drones. You can see them fly every fucking morning. Now, there's some other ways. Could it be something totally different? Could be a bunch of kids fucking around. I don't know, but I don't think so based on the images that I saw. I think our government knows exactly what these are, and this is another fucking mind game. Well, what if the government's doing it and it really is something you're going to get? Then we'll know when it happens. But right now, while they're showing it to you, that's not what it is. Because if that's what it was, they'd be doing whatever they do with them and they wouldn't be showing it to you. The fact that that Fox News has this on about twice an hour for the last 3 days, from what I've seen by casual observation, tells me to follow the rule. The harder they point at something, the less you should look at it. The harder they pointed at COVID, the less you should have looked at it. The more they told you, sneeze into your sleeve, wash your hands, you're going to die, get a test, get a vaccine, stay 6 feet away. Everything they told you, the more they told you it, the bigger the lie. And that was both the positive and the negative, and I don't mean good or bad, I mean the way they angled it. The harder they told you that hydroxychloroquine was dangerous to take, the more you should have known that it was safe, given it's available over-the-counter around the world, right? And that our own VA, Department of Veteran Affairs, for people they're treating for things like lupus and other conditions, hands out 60,000 doses of a thing a day, and the media is telling you it should only be used in a hospital under the supervision of a doctor. What about the 60,000 fucking doses that the same government's handing out every day? How's that work? You see, and you think it's different this time. It's not. Remember what we talked about this week? Gelman amnesia? Gelman amnesia, where you listen to the news, they talk about something you're well informed about, and you know they're full of shit. They go to the next story, it's something you're not well informed about, and because you're not well informed about it, you believe what they have to say because it sounds plausible, because they're at least smart enough to formulate it right. It applies to everything. Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, etc. are not trustable sources of information. It doesn't mean all the information that you get from them is wrong. It means they cannot be trusted. So when there's something that really there's nothing you can do about, nothing's really happening, drones are flying around, okay, yeah, okay, but nothing's really happening, it's not really newsworthy. This is not, I mean, this might be something that if, you know, if they really didn't know, maybe it's, you know, once every 4 hours on cable news, maybe top of the hour news for like noon and six or something, you know. It's kind of that level of a story, if it even was what they say it was. But this shit where they're like, you know, baited breath with it, you know, like, come on. You know it's bullshit or they wouldn't be doing it. Please, folks. Please. Now, what do I think they're doing? This is why I said it ties into Ron Paul's segment today. We just destabilized Syria. We just removed a supposed dictator who's actually kept the country stable for decades. We now have Christians being murdered in Syria, even though they said it wasn't going to happen. A notice went out from the new guy in charge, the super terrorist that Ron talked about, saying you better not celebrate Christmas Mass this year. Don't go to the church for Christmas. Yeah, so we just did that. We've made a hell of a mess of this place. They told you it was a good thing. Assad is gone. He's a brutal, murderous dictator. That's got to be good to get rid of one of those. The world's a better place without Assad. I guarantee you that'll be a new talking point soon, just like the world's a better place without Saddam Hussein. Okay? And it will only be so long before they'll tell you that we have to do something. They don't want you looking at this right now. And there's a very simple, like, don't always make things deep, multi-layered conspiracies. Sometimes the reason is incredibly simplistic. I meant what I said. They're messing up as much as they can before they leave because they want to hold on to power and they want failure from the Trump administration. So what they want is no one paying attention to Syria at all right now, so that about March, April, when they decide to tell you what's been going on all along, it looks like it all happened under his leadership. This is not a defense of Trump. This is an analysis of the facts that are available to us today. It is the biggest fuck-up that we actively have going on the planet right now that we directly touched and we didn't have to. And I'm going to tell you this right now, whether you believe it or not, right? You can believe it or you cannot believe it, right? Okay. If we had said, don't fucking do that, then it wouldn't have happened. This happened, it was sanctioned by the United States government and the Biden administration and the deep state. Only with our blessing would this occur. Only with our blessing this could occur. If you don't want to believe that, don't believe it, but wait until you see how much more bullshit that they pull. And Ron was right, so was Dan, when they said, historically, this should be a quiet time. And if you look back historically, when a president is leaving office and handing it off to another president, especially when it's not like Reagan to Bush, where you're not handing it off to your own vice president, you've been working together for, you know, 8 years or whatever, when you're handing it off to someone, even in your own party, but they're like a newcomer, you don't fuck with a lot of shit at the end. You write your pardons, you start working on your memoirs, you start doing your fundraising for your fucking library and shit like that. Like, you kind of leave things the way they are, because continuity is important, and even if things are going to be different, it's better that there's not a lot of changes made in that last 60 days. They've thrown that playbook out the window because he's not one of them. Again, that's not an endorsement. I'm just telling you, these people, he's in on it too. He's just part. No, if he was, there wouldn't have been how many indictments, right? If he was in on it too, they wouldn't have turned a misdemeanor with an extended, exceeded statute of limitations into an obscure 32 or 38 count felony indictment. He's not one of them. It doesn't mean he's all on your side. It doesn't mean you can trust him, but he is not one of them. And anybody at this point that believes he is one of them, that he is just part of the deep state cabal and different pain or whatever, then I don't know that I can help you. At least in that regard. Maybe I can help you grow your garden. or cook some food or something like that. But when it comes to analyzing the geopolitical landscape, if you still believe he's one of them, man, right, then you just you hate the man so much that you have a different form of TDS than the average leftist. You really do. And there's some of you do, and I know it. And some of my good friends have this problem. They so hate this man. They're so angry. I'll tell you, one of the things it's linked to is Israel. Trump's a friend of Israel. It doesn't mean he endorses everything that Israel does. It doesn't mean he's a closet Jew. It doesn't mean he's actually a Mason or whatever other bullshit people come up with, right? It just means that he's friendly to Israel. And there's some people that any politician who's any way toward friendly toward Israel, they have to be bad. And they have to, and everything they do has to be bad. And every, this is my autistic libertarian friends I keep talking about. They can't use nuance at all. I implore you to use some nuance. And there's two ways to handle this. Either don't give a shit or use nuance. Both of those work. But this all in on anything or anyone or any angle will always lead you astray. Even if you're right at the moment, you will be wrong more often than you're right, because the entire system, including the drones, man, the drones, is about leading you emotionally in the absence of your own logic and reason. If you want to get something done, appeal to emotion. It may be a fallacy, but it's also damn effective. Damn effective, right? One of the few times I've ever seen Hollywood admit that it's bullshit is the movie with Adam Sandler where he goes to school and he has to like debate or prove himself or whatever, and he's in the thing where the guy says, you know, nowhere in your rambling, incoherent nonsense did you make anything close to a point. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul. That one. But see, that usually works. That was the whole joke there. I can't remember what that was called, right? But you guys know what I mean, that movie. That if you get people feeling you, if you appeal to, if you talk like a preacher effectively at their level into their world and you make them emotional, you can win them over with no logic at all. That happens a lot. It's a pattern to look for and identify. With that, I'm going to wrap up. Tomorrow we'll have a Friday flashback, and next week we'll do it all over again. Thank you guys for tuning in today and this week. Remember, you can always help me out by doing your online shopping at tspaz.com. Remember, our item of the day today is the Vavor Conical Burr Coffee Grinder. Guys, that thing is awesome. Check it out for yourself or as a great gift. Up your coffee game. A lot of other great stuff this week on T-Spaz, so check it out. Consider becoming an MSB member. And again, thank you to everyone who supports me, listens to my show, and shares it. And Merry Christmas to you all. Are they going to bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.